The Water Values Podcast, session 145.
Welcome to the Water Values Podcast. This is the podcast dedicated to water utilities, resources, treatment, reuse, and all things water. Now here's your host, Dave McGimsey.
Hello and welcome to another session of the Water Values Podcast. As my daughter Sarah said, my name is Dave McGimsey and thanks so much for joining me. Got a great show for you today. Reese Tisdale, rather than doing his typical Bluefield on Tap segment, comes at us for a full-length feature interview today, and he does a great job as always. But before we get to Reese, let's do a little housekeeping like we normally do. First, thank you very much for those of you who've rated and reviewed the podcast. We got a couple more 5-star ratings. We're up to 110 5-star ratings, 119 ratings total. So, thank you so much for, rating and reviewing the show. Really appreciate it. We did get another review posted to Apple Podcasts, and it's by Johan Danger. For anyone interested in water, Johan says, this podcast is amazing. If you're looking to broaden your understanding of water-related issues, past, present, or future, listen to Dave's podcasts. Dave's guests are all experts in their respective fields. Whether your interests are in the science, technology, management, regulatory, legal, or financial aspects of water, you won't be disappointed. Well, thank you, Johan, for that fantastic rating and review. And with the name Johan Danger, it almost sounds like you're a member of the Hives. Is there a celebrity fan of the Water Values Podcast out there? Just curious. So with that, I'd also like to thank those of you who've made contributions to the Water Values Podcast. That helps to keep the water flowing, so to speak. You can make your contribution by going to the website, thewatervalues.com. Scroll down a little bit on the right-hand side. There's a little PayPal donate button. Contributions in any denomination are greatly appreciated and do help defray the not insignificant costs of keeping the Water Values Podcast going. So with that, let's get to our feature interview. Here is Reese Tisdale. So open your valves, fasten your seatbelts, and here we go. Well, hey, Reese, welcome back to the Water Values Podcast. How you been?
Pretty good, Dave. What's going on with you?
Oh, just, you know, staying busy. We closed a deal recently, sale of a municipal system that needed a lot of investment. So that was a good deal. But it's been a while since we've had you on. By my count, it's almost been a year and a half. I can't believe it's been that long since we've had you on as a featured guest. So we're really happy to have you back.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Well, game.
Time flies. Well, let's talk digital water today. And I know that Bluefield has done a lot of work in this area, a lot of market intelligence. But, you know, before we kind of dive into all that kind of stuff, can you give us just, you know, a thumbnail, you know, when we talk about digital water, what does that mean? When someone says digital water to you, what goes off in your mind?
Oh, good. How much time do we have? I think it's really the use of data and analytics and applying that to the water or wastewater systems as a whole. And what does that mean? That could be everything from, you know, customer management. So it could be things like billing and understanding what's happening at the customer level. Could be network distribution plant operations. So, you know, understanding in real time SCADA systems, how the assets are operating and asset management. And then also just taking some of that, but also in just back office operations or, you know, the back office looking at the financials and what's happening within the network itself. Also, you know, understanding workforce. That's a big question that's happening, rising more and more, is like what's happening with utility workforces. So I think it's one of these, digital is a buzzword. Some others call it smart water. Some call it intelligent water. There are a number of different monikers that people use. At Bluefield, we use digital. And, it's also ties into what's happening, and I've said this before on the podcast, what's happening in our daily lives, everything from, you know, connecting our phones to our computers to the assets, whether it be in the home, in this case, the municipality.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, terrific. So, in the U.S. we seem to, there's a lot of talk about smart meters and all that kind of stuff. I think it's easy for us for those of us who are based in the U.S. to kind of lose sight of what may be going on in the bigger picture. So can you tell us about what's happening globally in kind of the digital water space?
Yeah, so at Bluefield, we do look at global activity, and I think to your point, it's easy to lose sight of the rest of the world because by our measure, at least what we've been tracking, for various reasons, the U.S. does represent the lion's share of activity. But other markets worth is not a fair way to look at it, but other markets that companies or people should look at, one is the U.K. There's a lot of change that has happened in the U.K. over decades now at this point. Partly it's a privatized system as a whole.
Right.
And one thing that's interesting about it is because it's privatized, the regulator has a very, I don't know if it's the right word, heavy-handed approach and managing those utilities. And also just the capital and operating expenditures. They really talk about totex. And so with the emergence or advent of digital solutions, utilities and the engineering firms working at these utilities are really making a big push to deploy new solutions. And everything like leakage management is a big area of concern in the UK. And partly that's happened, you know, the regulator is forcing them to reach certain targets. And also there have been some big climatic events that have created all sorts of problems to the network, and it exposed some of them. And so the regulators rated them. So they're deploying things like smart meters and asset management solutions. So the UK is it the epicenter? It is a real it's an incubator for companies that have new solutions. So you're seeing companies that are coming out of the UK trying to get into other markets, whether it be the US or Australia, which is another market. You know, after the millennium drought, there was a real downturn in capital expenditures on water infrastructure. And so it seems there to be a more recent uptick, nowhere near what it was prior to the millennium drought or as they were dealing with it. And they were really, at that time, they were focused on water supplies. Now there's this real focus on asset management, but also looking at the operation side of the equation. And so that's where a lot of smart water solutions or digital water solutions are being deployed. So as a result, you know, we're seeing a fair amount of activity in those markets. And I think, you know, but like I said, the U.S. is taking up the biggest chunk. You know, I think in overall, globally, Bluefield, we tracked about 335 projects in 2018, and that, you know, like I said, I think 67 of them were in the U.S. for meters alone. So I would say, you know, lastly about Australia, there are companies that are trying to come out of Australia and enter the U.S. The U.S. is a big market. One, there are a lot of water systems. It's a difficult market, and it's also where it's fairly transparent transactionally as far as doing deals. It can be slow. And it, as a result, I mean, we can shift into this part of the conversation, but that is, you know, it's a slow market that utilities, because it's so fragmented, they don't always know what the options are.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd like to go a couple different directions, and hopefully I can remember all this stuff, but initially, I found it very interesting that the British regulator Ofwat is focused on leakage and is pushing the utilities
right
to take care of that issue, because we all know that adopting these technologies is not cheap necessarily. And so it's interesting that the regulator is the one that's pushing the utilities, not the utilities coming to the regulator and saying, hey, we got a great idea.
Yeah, it's interesting. And they, you know, for those who don't know, you know, they operate on 5-year cycles in the UK. So the AMP cycle is this last 5-year cycle is coming to an end. So now utilities are having to submit budgets. And it's competitive. So engineering firms are bidding on certain parts of projects to get into. And so then they will work with the respective utilities over the 5-year plan. And so every 5 years, there's this change, you know, the spend sort of, it's not flat from year to year. I think, you know, there are some years that are heavier than others just because of the timing of the cycles. But as we move into another phase, another five-year cycle, then there's ideally going to be more innovative solutions deployed. It's another way to, you know, it's another phase of growth for infrastructure investment, but technologies as a whole. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious if you have any thoughts on whether or not any of that is driven by, climate issues. Australia has obviously been hit by a drought. The UK, there's been, you know, concerns about water supply. And I'm just kind of curious if the focus in those countries has been, you know, informed by climate, because if you're going to be spending money, essentially increasing rates to adopt these technologies, you know, is climate kind of behind all this stuff?
I think ultimately, I think it is in many respects. The same could be said for California, right? You know, I think once there's a big drought, you know, California, I don't know, it's the sixth, seventh largest economy in the world. So on scale, it's pretty significant. But I think the point is if it's the UK and they get major freezes, you know, or major storm events that impact them, and it exposes flaws or failures in the infrastructure network, then, you know, I think the regulator is forcing them to address that. In Australia, it's the same thing. You know, the Millennium Drought was really, it went on forever, seemingly. And most of the population, 83%, is served by these large utilities. Now, they spend a lot of money, and ratepayers definitely have not been happy over the past couple of years. And, you know, the thought of putting more raising their rates to deal with new technologies is probably not the most exciting thing. I mean, look at what happened with all the desalination projects. But I think ultimately, to your point, I think the resiliency, ideally, these smarter solutions, move utilities on the path of resiliency. Resiliency is a big word. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. But ideally, it is a state in which the utility is, you know, paying for itself. You know, it's operating effectively, so the water quality, wastewater management is being handled appropriately. It means that, you know, financially the utility is standing on its own, defining that however you want it, is a public system. And so that needs to be dealt with. So, and also just workforce management as a whole, which sort of wraps up into that. I'd say more financial. So I think it is. These storm events, they're not going away. So understanding the network, and sort of when your first question was, what is digital water? A big part of this is understanding what's happening in the network. And that's where these countries, whether it be the UK or Australia and Israel for that matter, are out ahead. The U.S. is a big market, right? So you have different regions and different states, different jurisdictions and different systems. Everything is operating independently. There's not one regulator. Who knows how many regulators. when you take into account the municipality, the county, the water district, the state, the federal government, there are these layers that create all these problems. So there's really who's ultimately in charge. That's a bigger question.
Yeah, yeah. So let's bring it back to the U.S. You've mentioned that, you know, number one, it's a big market. It's a fragmented market. There's a lot of metering project activity going on here. What are some of the other things you're seeing in the U.S. market?
Yeah, so I would say asset management is, you know, that is basically, you know, managing the utility assets. And so I think that's where a lot of interest is happening. In fact, that, you know, there are policies coming into place, whether it be in New Jersey or Michigan, that are forcing or compelling, is a nice way to put it, utilities and municipalities to develop asset management plans. I mean, there, in fact, and I think you've actually had guests on your podcast, that they have solutions, software solutions to help utilities sort of develop asset management plans more effectively. You know, the first step in the journey of a utility is understanding your assets. You can't do predictive analytics or maintenance without the underlying or baseline of that. So I think that's a big area of activity in the U.S. I'd say to your point about metering, I think last year I said there were 335 projects. 67 were metering projects in the U.S. But that, you know, what's amazing is that's over a million meters that are planned to be deployed in the U.S. Across those projects. It's a lot of meters. And I would say what was interesting about that and sort of related to some things you, at least you've been talking about recently that I've seen is sort of the issue of privacy is starting to come up. And that's an argument that people oppose for whatever reason they're opposed. It could be truly privacy. It could just be cost, you know, customer protection of rising rates. But the issue of, you know, putting meters on every smart meters with real-time, you know, tracking or analytics has started to raise some flags that are a big concern. And we've seen things like that in some court cases, I think, that you have more exposure to in Illinois and Indiana.
Yeah. I mean, you're referring to the Naperville case. I've written blog posts about that. And actually, I've got an article coming out in the Journal of the American Water Works Association. It'll be published in either May or June on that case, and kind of it's fascinating because it's an electric case, right. but I think everything applied will have equal applicability. At least in my mind, it'll have equal applicability to water. The privacy concerns are fascinating. You mentioned all those meter projects. Now, Are they all, you know, are they all kind of like smart meters, or are some of them just, excuse me, what I would call like, radio read meters, you know, because I hear some people in the industry saying, yeah, we're getting these, you know, smart meters, and it's the radio read meters. It's not as though they're going to have this treasure trove of data.
Yeah, so they're mostly AMI. So they're basically AMI enabled, at least. And you know, the thing is that, you know, the point about the privacy. So the concern is, you know, if these are AMI and that they're sort of able to provide real time data to the utility, what's happening at the home or commercial facility, wherever it is. What's interesting is that the next step in that, you know, that's the honestly. Aside from the cost, the easy part is installing the meter, right? The next step is someone's got to manage all that data and information. So privacy, I don't mean to make light of it, but that's probably the least of our concerns. Yeah. The issue is like all those gigabytes, terabytes of, you know, data, Googles of data are going to come flowing into the utility. And, it's, you know, managing it, that's a big task. And I'd say one of the bigger issues is that utilities, in fact, they do install these systems, and they don't even enable them to collect all the data. So in many respects, they're overspending. Maybe they're getting bad advice, or they're just not set up to do it. We all overbuy at times, admittedly. So I think that's but that's where the trend is going, right? I mean, I think the idea is that a municipality or utility needs to better understand what's happening. One, you know, non-revenue, we all talk about non-revenue water. A big part of that is, you know, it's not just leakage. That's part of it, and that helps understand are there leaks, but also it's just billing. You know, I'd like to think if they're installed correctly, with that caveat, I'd like to be billed correctly as opposed to I always want to underpay, but I'd rather I don't want to overpay.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, managing the data. So there's the storage issue, right. You know, is kind of artificial intelligence, machine learning. Is that, it seems to me that is an area that would be ripe for data management, like just telling, you know, figuring out, okay, you know, either it's going to start spitting out work orders or spitting out, you know, here's the hot area, so to speak. We need to to, you know, go pay this portion of the distribution system or, you know, some attention or something like that. I mean,
AI is really interesting. I mean, I don't want to get out over my skis here. AI to me is really interesting, but you know, that has to be explained to a pretty conservative group of companies or the utilities. They're conservative inherently, and I think there's a good reason for that, right? You know, they cannot. When you start dealing with water, I think part of it is just culturally that's where they are. But they have high risk, right? So where are they placing their dollars and their resources, and what do they understand about that? I mean, that's sort of the bigger challenge for all of us is what does all of this stuff mean? AI. I mean, to give you an example, so you know, that's basically I think you had Doug Hattler from Fractal on as a guest at one point. You know, Fractal, that's what they do. What's amazing, so to show you where that's going, if this is a signal, it's one data point, but Carita just made a $37 million investment in Fractal for 50% of the company. Now, Fractal's only been around 3 or 4 years, but they're deploying artificial intelligence, not in the back office, but they are on the networks and trying to help utilities understand predictively where the break's going to happen and where the problems in the network can happen. So that's artificial intelligence. There are different ways to do it. I mean, we ourselves at Bluefield Research, we have a whole ton of data that we have collected over time. We actually have someone right now using AI to go through it and start, you know, sort of cleaning it up. So it's applicable, absolutely.
Yeah, I just think that AI and machine learning are going to play a huge role in figuring out how to use that data.
Right.
And like you say, there's a lot of utilities who are deploying smart meters. They're kind of overbuying. And so I think the AI and the machine learning will have an opportunity to provide more value for the data that they're collecting.
I mean, sadly, I'm getting a little long in the tooth. I know it don't sound that way, but the analysts at Bluefield, they probably have a better idea than I do of some of these things. You know, I bring up certain things and they look at me like I was, I'm a dinosaur.
Hey, you mentioned the Carita investment in Fractal. What are some of the other deal flow things that are going on in the digital water space?
Yeah, so I think that was a big one that caught everybody's eye. I just think just by the valuation in and of itself. But, you know, Arcadis, it acquired Siemens last year. So, you know, looking at asset, back to my point about the UK, Siemens comes out of the UK. They've had great success looking at that market. Now they're through Arcadis or looking more closely at the US. Suez, had part of Optimatics. And it is now, basically through its venture. I believe that was through Suez Ventures, and they bought out the remaining stake. So that's happening. Those are a couple deals. I mean, I think we tracked 21 acquisitions in 2018 related specifically to digital water, which is down, quite honestly, from 2017. I think it was 31 that we captured. Hopefully we're capturing most of them. We're pretty diligent about it. But I think – you know, what that says is that there is no shortage of activity. I mean, look at what Xylem has been doing over the past couple of years. A lot of these deals, they're not huge blockbusters, right? And a lot of these are just small, because that's kind of the nature of this business. I mean, if you think about it as like really a technology, Silicon Valley type group of companies. They're coming out of that kind of environment, very high tech, data driven. So they're startups. And so as a result, there's also a number of these companies that are also venture backed. You know, I think there were $54 million of early stage investments last year that we tracked. And that's been pretty steady over the past couple of years. And I want to say, is that from around 50 to 55 million dollars over the past couple of years? So that's been pretty good. M&A can be a little bit lumpy, and that can be swung by a couple big deals here and there.
Yeah, and One thing I'd like to explore, we had you on one of the Bluefield on Tap segments not too long ago after WEF, I think, and Bluefield had done some research about engineering firms and their contributions to the WEF agenda. And so how are the engineering firms shaping up in this kind of deal flow? I mean, are they participating or are they just kind of consumers of the digital water and integrating those solutions that these tech companies, so to speak, are creating for the industry?
Yeah, no, I think they play a pivotal role, I think, in many respects. I mean, we look at them on the municipal side, they are gatekeepers to the sector, you know, particularly for the larger ones, but as a whole, I mean, they have the experience, the engineering knowledge of water infrastructure. And so they are advisors to a lot of utilities. Now, some of them have launched and acquired and spun out their own solutions. So, you know, if you look at what Black & Veatch said, Etonix, I think they spun that out as its own business recently. I mentioned Siemens. So Arcadis acquired Siemens. Arcadis is out of the Netherlands, I guess that's their headquarters, but they have a big U.S. presence. So Arcadis has acquired Siemens. They're now looking at the U.S. So that's one strategy. Tetra Tech a couple years ago acquired Indus, which was much smaller. I think that was a pretty small deal. $18 million sticks out in my mind. I can't remember. And then Brown and Caldwell is another one who they've launched BC Blue. But what I think is interesting about Brown and Caldwell is that they don't have a specific solution that they're offering. I think what they're doing is they're approaching the utilities and trying to help them leverage what they're already using. That because that's one of the issues, back sort of like understanding your assets, but also leveraging what solutions and technologies you already have in house. Because a lot of these utilities, they have enterprise systems in place. They do, you know, have these different things. And so rather than trying to push new products onto them, finding solutions to operate within what they're already doing, which is kind of one of the challenges. But the EPCs do play a big role, and it's interesting to see how they will evolve because it's a different business model, right? You know, the EPCs they're working on billable hours. I mean, they're consultants in many respects. Then if you start adding technology, and that's why Black & Veatch has spun out their digital solution, because it kind of keeps it at arm's distance, kind of, you know, aside from their core business. And that, in a way, is what happened with Innovyze and MWH, you know, several years ago. Innovyze had been around a long time, but it was always kept at arm's length from the rest of Innovyze's engineering business. And I think part of that was personality of the people involved. I think part of that was also just from a business structure, it made more sense to do that. It's a higher margin business that operates differently.
Reese, you've been fantastic. Every time I talk to you, that's why I love doing the Bluefield on Tap segments, because I get all this great market insight. Is there anything on digital water that I have not asked that you think is important that the listeners, understand or comprehend?
I would say one thing we talked mainly about the municipalities itself. I would say one area that I think is really interesting, and that's what's happening, and this is what's happening, you know, on the electricity side of things and to some extent gas, but really electricity, is what's happening within the home itself and companies trying to figure out ways to penetrate that space. And what's interesting, there's a company, I believe it's Roost, and what it's the same thing. They're looking at things like leakage management, but they have partnerships with insurance companies. So the insurance companies are getting involved increasingly in this space, and that makes sense. I think Suez has the same thing in France through one of their venture investments, if I recall correctly. But the point being is like a new group of players, new type of players who are at risk, right? You know, if there are climatic events, you know, if there's high swings in temperatures, then an insurance company ultimately would like to know or have more control over that situation if they can to reduce their exposure. So I think that's something interesting. There are a couple other companies that are active in that space. Berkshire Hathaway has just made a big investment or is partnering with Triple Plus. There's another company, Wendt, who is, I think they're mainly focused on commercial facilities. And commercial is sort of in between that, obviously, residential and municipality. I think that's another space where there's a bottom line, more bottom line, where there is more bottom line exposure at scale. And that's an area of growth, I think, going forward.
Yeah. Well, as always, Reese, it's great to have you on. Thanks so much for taking some time out of your day to come on to the show. For those folks who want to find out more about you and Bluefield Research, where can they go to get that information?
www.bluefieldresearch.com. Pretty straightforward. Bluefield Research.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Reese. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, Dave. Good to talk to you.
Likewise. Bye. Well, I hope you enjoyed that podcast with Reese Tisdale, president of Bluefield Research. As always, fantastic insights. I'm always very impressed by the job that Reese and the folks at Bluefield do tracking the market intelligence in the water sector. Would love to hear what you think about this episode. You can find the show notes for this session at thewatervalues.com pod 145. That's thewatervalues.com/pod145. You can email me at david@thewatervalues.com. You can also tweet at me at DTM1993, and you can tweet about the podcast using the hashtag watervalues. And please do send me a favor. Like I mentioned earlier, please rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, whatever podcast directory you're listening on. If there's an opportunity to rate and review it, please do so. Would greatly appreciate it. It's a great way for other folks to find out and kind of drive the podcast up the ratings. You can also sign up for the Water Values newsletter at thewatervalues.com. And with that, let's close it out. So in closing, please remember to keep the core message of the Water Values podcast in mind as you go about your daily business. Water is our most valuable resource, so please join me by going out into the world and acting like it.
You've been listening to the Water Values Podcast. Thank you for spending some of your day with my dad and me.
Well, thank you for tuning in to the disclaimer. I'm a lawyer licensed in Indiana and Colorado, and nothing in this podcast should be taken as providing legal advice or as establishing an attorney-client relationship with you or with anyone else. Additionally, nothing in this podcast should be considered a solicitation for professional employment. I'm just a lawyer that finds water issues interesting and that believes greater public education is needed about water issues. And that includes enhancing my own education about water issues, because no one knows everything about water.